Welcome to the Capital News. I'm your host, Alex Caritas. Today is Friday, April 23rd, 2021. Thank you so much for joining me. Already the end of a wild and crazy week. This is just going to be a weekly wrap-up. Go over some things that we discussed this week. Today, however, the stock market completely shrugged off yesterday's narrative, which we called out yesterday. We called that BS, right? Because we know that the only important narrative, the only one that truly matters, is what central banks continue to do. The major central banks, the Federal Reserve, the European Central Bank, the Bank of Japan, People's Bank of China, the Bank of England, even the Reserve Bank of Australia to some extent. What are the big boys doing? Well, we know because we discussed it yesterday. Federal Reserve's balance sheet hitting an all-time high of $7.82 trillion. That's the narrative. It's the only one that matters. They keep pumping up their balance sheets, they keep throwing liquidity into the system, equity markets keep grinding higher. They will do so until they don't. I don't know when this day is going to come. I don't know if it's going to be because some of these major central banks throw a curveball and say, yeah, you know what, we are going to taper. We are going to reduce our balance sheets. We are going to increase interest rates. I do not believe that's going to happen. That's why I think that would be a curveball if they should decide to do so. So it's more or less just system exhaustion. This would be akin to what took place during the dot-com boom and bust. There was not an exogenous shock to the system. There was no geopolitical event. There was no pandemic. There was no war that pricked that bubble. It was simply system exhaustion. And I was thinking about this earlier today. What we are in the midst of right now is a triple whammy. We are dealing with the fiscal policies of the 1929 and the 1930s, which created the Great Depression, as opposed to it just being a severe recession, turning it into the Great Depression. So you have your trade wars, you have massive fiscal policy and interference from the government, which again created the Great Depression. It did not aid in getting us out of the Great Depression. It was the cause of the Great Depression. So we have that. We have the trade wars. We have the massive fiscal policy. Number two is we have this fascination with the tech sector and now with cryptocurrency. So this is reminiscent of the dot-com boom. And of course, there's going to be the subsequent bust. It's just a matter of time. And then the third whammy in this trifecta is what's taking place once again in the real estate market. All-time highs, no inflation though. Median house prices for last month came in at $344,000 and change. $344,000 and change for the median home. Median wage, or the median household income. It's about $68,000. So you're talking four or five times household income for the median home. And there's no end in sight of this either. This will continue to happen, probably through the course of this spring and summer, if not through the remainder of this year, I would imagine. And what's also interesting is I came across an interesting tweet that somebody put out there and noted a Google search trend. And one such trend is a big spike in people searching, when will the housing market crash? When will the housing market crash? People know what's going on, ladies and gentlemen. We can feel it. They might not be able to understand about the Federal Reserve monetary policy, fiscal policy, but people can understand it. It doesn't take a genius to understand it. Yeah, interest rates might be low, mortgage rates are low, yada, 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 but I don't want to spend this kind of money on a house. I don't have that kind of money on a house. And depending on the market in which you're looking, you might not even be able to get away with a home inspection because people are coming in bidding right out of the gate above asking price, all cash. The only chance, or one of the only few chances that a young couple might have for a starter home, is if the person or the family who is selling the home wants the new buyer to be a young couple. They say, yeah, you know, we don't care about all the money you're throwing at us here or there. Here's our asking price, blah, 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 blah. We really want this house to go to a young couple because this is a good starter home for them, and they're give it to them. That's who we want to sell it to. I've come across some stories, some articles written that some people are actually looking for that. Now, that's probably the exception and not the rule, but nonetheless, this is pretty much the only chance a lot of these younger people have. Or perhaps a young couple with children, and they need to get a bigger house to take care of their growing family. Same situation. Otherwise, this stuff is being purchased by foreigners. It's being purchased by pension funds, hedge funds, private equity. They got the cash. That's why you're seeing a lot of these all-cash offers. People don't have the cash. It's pension funds. It's private equity. It's hedge funds. It's big investment firms who are coming up and snatching up all of these properties. Okay, that's the craze. And it's happening in one market after the next. And don't forget, with respect to the real estate market, we still have to contend with all of the moratoriums. We still have the student loan moratoriums. We still have the rent and mortgage moratoriums, which are in effect, at least with respect to the mortgage and rent, through, I think, to the end of June. So we're only a couple months away. And then what are they going to do after that? That was forbearance. That was a moratorium. That was not forgiveness if people chose to take advantage of it. Now, not of course, everybody didn't. Some people were perfectly fine continuing to make their payments or some portion of them. But some might have been in dire straits, or they just simply made the decision, hey, I don't have to make it. I'll just save up for the time being. And of course, it's now all going to be owed back. This is going to cause a cluster within the court system to deal with all of this, and that's already taking place. But it appears to me, at least in what I come across in a lot of the financial media and a lot of politicians that get up and give interviews, this just is continuously swept under the rug. This isn't even discussed. What's going to happen to all of these people? How many of them are actually going to have the money to pay all of this back rent or back mortgage payments? What's going on with all of these landlords, too? So we still have to contend with all of this. So we are far from out of the woods, and I just want to continue to remind the audience of what's going on. So I think we got a triple whammy here. The trade wars, the fiscal policy, the fascination with tech stocks and cryptocurrency being the new fad. There is no price that is too high, you know, which is completely ridiculous. But that was the mantra. Then it's the mantra now. And with what's taking place in the real estate market. So this is a triple whammy. This is going to look like the biggest economic and financial nuclear bomb that's ever been created. And when it goes off, nobody's going to be safe. It doesn't matter what you're holding, what you're not holding, whether you're diversified, whether you're not. This is just going to be catastrophic. I don't mean to be this grim, but this is what they're doing. You can take all of those events in history in isolation, and they were bad to begin with. Now you're combining all three of them. What do you think is going to happen? I'm just connecting the dots. And it's the same type of idiots who are at the helm. In fact, it is the same idiots at the helm who were there 30 years ago. They're there now today. So, that short-lived narrative of yesterday, market selling off because of the expected tax increases, oh, that was completely undone. Completely undone. Bunch of nonsense, ladies and gentlemen. Look, CNBC, Bloomberg, Fox Business, they just have to fill the airtime. That's all they're doing. So they got to make something up. Nobody wants to come out and say the things that I'm saying and a handful of other people online are saying about what's really going on here. They got to get people on to give interviews and pump this and pump that and talk about this, that, and the other. They just got to come up with a narrative to justify why stocks are up or why stocks are down. Very rarely do they ever really mention the culprit of it. All of the monetary and fiscal stimulus that is being thrown into the system. But nonetheless, here, market performance, we have the dollar index at 90.83. So this is the third straight weekly loss for the dollar index. Bitcoin is at $50,300 a coin, well below its all-time high, about $63,000, $64,000 a coin seen a couple of weeks ago. And we have dollar weakness across the board. So we have the Dow Jones at 34,024 points. The S&P 500, I think, notched a new all-time high, 44,174 points. NASDAQ 100 put on a gain of over 1% today. So you got the Dow Jones and NASDAQ 100 all within a stone's throw of an all-time high. What's the crisis? What's the concern? Why do we have to continue to throw $120 billion at least, into the Treasury and mortgage-backed security market per month via the Federal Reserve's quantitative easing program? What's the problem? Why do we have to keep doing it? Despite the rosy outlook today here in the States, it was a sea of red across the pond in Europe. Japanese market did end up closing down 0.6%. The Australian market was flat. Let's look here on commodities. We got WTI at $62.04 a barrel. Brent, $66.04 a barrel. Natural gas, $2.72. Despite the continued dollar weakness, gold and silver came down a little bit further today. Gold at $1,776 an ounce. I like that number, the founding of our country, 1776. Silver at $25.98, so still flirting with that 26 handle. Copper's at $4.34 a pound. And last but not least, Uncle Sam's 10-year junk note is yielding 1.56%. Now, we're going to continue to obviously monitor this closely, but we have been somewhat consolidating and leveling out around this range. Could this be some type of yield curve control via the Federal Reserve? That is something we might find out next week when the Federal Reserve concludes their FOMC meeting, which, of course, will conclude on Wednesday. I also believe Wednesday is when President Demented Joe is going to be giving a speech to a joint session of Congress. But given the pandemic, I believe it's going to be a limited audience. Surprise, surprise. So that'll probably be the case, not only in person for a limited audience, but a limited audience of TV viewers as well. I'll probably watch it for the purpose of the podcast. Really not that interested, really don't want to do it. But for the interest of the podcast, I probably will, at least some of it. I imagine I'm going to feel embarrassed for my country, like I have several times already since this administration has been in power. But I guess we got to watch the ship go down. But, you know, I hope that's not the case. I hope Joe can complete the sentences and can read off the teleprompter and can make it somewhat interesting, have a little bit of energy, keep people's attention for a little bit, do something, because it hasn't been good so far. So that's some market performance. Of course, yesterday was the Department of Labor's release of the initial jobless claims report. 547,000 Americans filed for the week ending 17 April. The week prior was an increase of 10,000 to sit at 586,000. The de facto unemployment rate is at 12.5%, with 17.4 million Americans still claiming some form of unemployment insurance. That was a week-over-week increase of some 490,000 individuals, with the biggest gains being witnessed with the PUA and PEUC program. So we'll continue to monitor that closely, and a couple Fridays from now, the first Friday in May will give us the official jobs report. So, of course, we will be all over that. We discussed earlier this week as well, during our podcast, A World in Chaos, the geopolitical events that continue to unfold, whether that's the growing tensions between Israel, Syria, and Iran, the growing tensions between Russia and Ukraine. And it appears that Joe Biden is going to state that what took place during the Ottoman Empire 100 years ago was genocide against the Armenian people. So that is going to have some interesting ripple effects with respect to how Turkey responds to that as to who they may try to favor, because Turkey is very important geopolitically speaking. And it appears to me that President Erdogan of Turkey is playing all sides in this geopolitical battle, playing all sides, that the sides being China, Russia, the United States, and the European Union. So he has some options. And of course, Turkey is a weak economy, even though they are one of the largest largest economies on the planet by GDP. But nonetheless, they are suffering too. The weakest links go first, and we are starting to get some of these bigger economies into the fold, which I have been discussing here for the past year and a half, if not longer. Start off with the weakest, and you start making your way up the chain. They are combating some serious inflation. Okay? So all of this still has to unfold, and I do not think that the markets, the equity markets, are pricing in any of this risk. I think they just think that there's going to be one peace deal after the next. We can all hope and pray that that's the case. That's what we want. I know I do. I don't want any more war and conflict. We can't afford it from any standpoint, and we just shouldn't want it, period. But I just don't think that that's going to be the case. But we'll continue to monitor. Then, obviously, some of the biggest news out of the week was the Derek Chauvin trial, the guilty, guilty, guilty conviction by the jury after only 10, 11 hours of deliberations. And I wanted to take the time this week, past couple of days, to sort of listen to some other podcasts and some other people, just to get their take. I was listening to Peter Schiff, who I've mentioned here many times before, who typically speaks to the financial markets and economics like I do here at the Capital News. But he also goes into some political and social issues as well from time to time. And then there's Ben Shapiro, has one of the biggest podcasts out there, a conservative, an attorney. So it was interesting to get his take because I know what the mainstream media is saying. We all do. If you want to turn on MSNBC or CNN or NBC, any of them, for 5 minutes, you get a taste of what they're saying. You get it. We've known the story that they have been weaving for nearly a year when the George Floyd case started, when that whole incident took place. We knew the story. Derek Chauvin was a man who was going to be presumed guilty until proven innocent. The exact opposite of how our justice system is supposed to operate. You are presumed innocent until proven guilty. And I think a lot of people take that for granted. I don't think they understand what that actually means, how significant that is, how much protection that gives them against the state, which has basically unlimited resources to come after you with everything they got if they want to. And you pile on top of this the mob rule, the media hype. You know, it can get pretty daunting. It's pretty difficult. So I wasn't surprised when I heard Ben Shapiro and Peter Schiff both being surprised that, you know, you got Derek Chauvin was convicted on all three counts. Like I stated, I thought he would have been perhaps convicted of manslaughter. I thought the third degree and the second degree charges for murder were too much. They were over the top. Manslaughter, I could understand. Second degree and third degree, I thought were over the top, especially once you started to get a better picture of the totality of evidence. Again, the burden of proof is on the state. Their threshold is beyond a reasonable doubt. And so when it came to those more serious charges of second degree unintentional murder and third degree murder, I said, I don't think it's there. But the jury clearly did. And the question is, did they actually see that in the evidence? Did they actually think the state did such a good job in their presentation of the evidence with their witnesses, et cetera, that it was that clear cut? Or were they concerned for their own safety, for the safety of their community that was looted only several months prior? I mean, was this really a fair trial? Again, the appeals process will take care of that. And I still want to do my best to be respectful of the jury, but there was so much that had to affect them. They were not sequestered. They were driving into that courthouse, seeing their town boarded up again because they were expecting all hell to break loose, potentially. I mean, that's an image you don't want to see. And it's pretty easy to connect the dots. Well, we don't want to see this type of looting again, so I guess we're just going to convict the guy. So we'll obviously see what happens there. In reading some of the comments, especially with Ben Shapiro's audience, because I was listening to his podcast on YouTube, and I have no reason to doubt some of these people who were making comments, but some of them were claimed to be police officers. And they were also talking about the shooting that took place in Columbus, which we discussed earlier this week as well. And we're going to get to that here shortly as well. But you have police officers who are saying, look, if this police officer in Columbus, if he's prosecuted, we're going to resign. He was speaking for himself and a handful of other officers that he knows. We're going to resign. We're just not going to stand for it. Ben Shapiro was stating how he is being contacted by police officers all over the country, saying that they have resigned. Or the same thing, if this police officer in Columbus is prosecuted, they're going to resign. This is extremely dangerous. We witnessed this phenomenon last year with the fallout of George Floyd, with the crazy call of defunding the police. And for those idiot cities that actually did defund the police, they're doing a 180 now, but of course that doesn't get a lot of the news coverage. And why do you think they're doing a 180? Oh, that's because their towns, their cities descended into chaos. Massive crime waves is what took place. Oh, geez, you get rid of the police officers who are there for law and order, you get rid of them, and criminals come out onto the streets with a whole bunch of extra confidence, and the crime rate goes up. Well, what a surprise. They can't figure this out. I'm telling you, folks, liberalism, when it comes to policy and economics, is a mental disease. I don't understand how these people cannot connect the dots, but this is the stuff they come up with. This is the stuff they come up with. And then they look at each other, hands up in the air. How could this have happened? We got rid of the police. How could crime have gone up? I can't figure it out. I thought the police were the problem. Can't figure it out. This is very dangerous. And this is the reason why I focused on this case. Because I prefer to stick to the geopolitical events. I prefer to stick to the financial markets and economics. I really do. But when you have a case like this, the Derek Chauvin trial, where it is so evident that the mob played a big role in this decision, it needs to be voiced. Because if they can get away with it once, what makes you think they're not going to attempt to get away with it again somewhere else? I mean, with respect to this shooting in Columbus, you had LeBron James, NBA superstar, tweet almost immediately that you're next. Accountability, you're next. With a photo of that police officer out of Columbus. You're next. Now, I'm going to give LeBron James the benefit of the doubt in saying when he says you're next, accountability, he means prosecution and conviction like what happened to Derek Chauvin. But of course, somebody could misinterpret that tweet and say you're next as, oh, I'm going to put a hit out on this guy. Now, that tweet was subsequently taken down because LeBron probably ended up watching the rest of that tape, the rest of that video cam footage, and said, oh, the police officer might actually be a hero. Now, he didn't say that, but of course, once you look at it, the police officer saved that other young black woman's life. But apparently her life didn't matter. Well, maybe she would have gotten stabbed. Maybe the other girl would have missed her. You know, you don't know. You don't know. So you just should have let it play out. I don't know how the media can make the comments that they make after watching that footage. What was the police officer supposed to do? Let the other girl stab her? I mean, it's not like this young girl that died. It's not like she was a petite little thing. I mean, she was wound up, ready to go. There would have been some twist, weight, and torque put into that knife. Easily doing some serious damage, if not killing that other young girl. And of course, you get the mother of the young girl who passed away, who was shot. And her life is upside down. Of course it is. But it's my understanding that her daughter was in foster care. So where was the mother? What was the circumstances around all of this? Are we allowed to ask that question? Of course we're allowed to ask that question. It's a free country. We want the totality of evidence. That's how it's supposed to work. What about the other mother of the other young black woman who could have been killed, who could have been stabbed? Has her mother been paraded out on the media yet? Because I bet she's thankful for that police officer. And don't forget, this family called the cops. So clearly they didn't think that the police officers were racist or were making a decision based off of race. They called them to their location. And if you have a lot of police officers who are saying, look, I already am concerned with perhaps losing my life just by going out and doing my job on a daily basis, and I don't know if I'm going to make it back to see my family again at the end of my shift. Now you got to deal with being under the microscope and being prosecuted by the media and by the mob, and then convicted by a jury because they may very well be frightened to death, and perhaps justifiably so, by what the mob is going to do to them if they don't come down with the verdict that they want. And of course, depending on what idiot you were listening to on the mainstream media, there were some people who were actually hoping that Chauvin was acquitted so they could point the finger at the system and say, look how racist the system is. He walked because our justice system is racist. Look at it. They acquitted him on all counts. I said they should have acquitted him on all counts to stand up to the mob rule and say this country is not going to cower and succumb to mob rule. It's not how we do business here. And every juror should have stood up and said why. That's why. We do not cave to mob rule. We are not going to be a puppet on the string dancing to what the media thinks should have happened, to what politicians think should have happened. That's what gives me the most concern. That's why I have focused on this story, because it's the bigger picture. It's not just about George Floyd and Derek Chauvin. And of course, Crazy Nancy is thanking George Floyd for dying, like he sacrificed himself, as if he was a Marine storming a beach or a firefighter running into a burning building to save a family and didn't make it out himself. I don't know what these people are on. I don't know where they come from. It's a mental disease. They are destroying this country left and right. And it's only going to get worse because police officers are going to leave the beat. They are going to leave. And who could blame them? Who could blame them? It's not as if they're making buku money, putting their lives on the line, looking and witnessing some of the worst of humanity. I mean, God only knows what a lot of these officers have to deal with on a day-by-day basis. Now they have to worry about being prosecuted and convicted because the mob's going to come down on you. I mean, this is pretty interesting where we are. And I'm starting to see some people waking up, whether it's people joining this podcast on various platforms and making some comments here and there, or on other podcasts or other sites, and I'll read their comments because I like to get a sense, a feel as to what people are saying. And I'm starting to see a lot more people who are waking up. And that's what's going on here. I mean, this is all a test to see how far the media, and specifically the left wing, can push the country. How far can they go? How much can they get away with before there's big pushback? And people are definitely starting to wake up. The question is, when is this pushback going to come? Because it has to come. And I hope it's peaceful. I really do. Through our elected officials, through peaceful marches and protests, in those types of movements. Because things can get accomplished that way. They have many, many times in the past. There is historical precedent for it. And in many cases, peaceful protests are the best way to go about doing it. But the media, the left wing, these Democrats, they are not going to stop this. They are not going to stop it because they think that they got momentum going here. So clearly, I'm concerned for my country on a number of fronts. On all three legs of the stool that I like to discuss, the economics, the politics, and the social issues. To me, it's all crumbling. And in some instances, there does need to be a rebuilding of these institutions. But that doesn't mean we throw the baby out with the bathwater. There are still some solid foundational building blocks that exist that are solid foundational building blocks because they are solid, because they are rooted in principle, because they are rooted in historical precedent. And we can thank our founding fathers for that. What we've built on top of it has been a disgrace on many fronts. And we get to witness this nonsense every single day. And now it's getting worse because we're starting to get deeper and deeper into mob rule. And that's the point. And everybody should understand this because this is not a difficult concept to understand. That's not what this country is about. So pay attention, turn people on to the Capitol News, turn people on to Ben Shapiro, Peter Schiff, and other like-minded individuals and programs who are going to talk about this stuff because it's important. It is important that people understand what is going on. These are not one-off scenarios. These are their building blocks to tear this country apart. This is divide and conquer, and we can't fall for it. Because if we do, well, then that's the part. When you get divided, they conquer. And it's not going to be a pretty picture. With that happy note, have a nice weekend. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capitol News. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.